The Guardian.
Welcome to the Global Development Podcast. I'm Annie Kelly. Today we're going to be asking how the roads have become one of the world's biggest killers. Every year, 1.3 million people are killed and a further 50 million injured, the vast majority in developing countries where road deaths are placing a huge strain on healthcare systems and thwarting anti-poverty efforts. Joining me to discuss why this is happening is Kevin Watkins from the ODI, road safety consultant Kate McMahon, and Veronica Raffo from the World Bank. But first, let's go to Bangladesh, where reporter Sajid Chowdhury has been investigating the rising death toll on the roads.
Bangladesh's road safety scenario is now among the worst in the world. The number of annual deaths ranges from the official 4,000 to the World Health Organization's estimate of up to 20,000, which is alarming for a country that is relatively unmotorized. Reports place the road accident fatality rate as high as 100 deaths per 10,000 vehicles. This is one of the highest in the world and the highest in the region. By comparison, in the UK, and indeed in many other countries across the developed world, there is approximately one death per 10,000 vehicles. Cars, trucks, buses, motorcycles, rickshaws, roadside marketplaces, garbage dumping grounds, herds of animals, and pedestrians all fight for space on highways that are primarily one lane per direction, with no streetlights, no pathways, and no median dividers. The majority of drivers do not have authentic licenses, and the majority of vehicles have no valid fitness registration. And all of this exists within a framework of poor road safety education, lack of awareness of road laws, and poor enforcement. Overall, in Bangladesh, the most threatened road user is the person on foot, in a rural area, on a highway when trucks and buses are around. To hear accounts of people who are now recovering from road accidents, I traveled west of Dhaka to the Center for the Rehabilitation of the Paralyzed, or the CRP. While there, I interviewed Muhammad Rafiqul Islam, one of CRP's patients.
My name is Muhammad Rafiqul Islam.
I was hit by a car while crossing the road. I fell in and came out the back of the car. And people then took me to Mymenshing Hospital. I was there for 12 days. And after 7 days, I regained my senses. I was then moved here to CRP, where I have been for 8 to 9 months. Because of the accident, I cannot feel anything in the lower portion of my body. I cannot even walk. This is my life now.
I also interviewed Muhammad Mashruq, a roadside shop owner who was struck by a pickup truck.
As I opened my shop on the side of the road, a pickup truck came from the opposite direction. Within a fraction of a second, it was on me, and I fell unconscious. I was then taken to Noakhali Medical Hospital, where they did some treatment to fix things and send me back home. After going back home, I felt strange that my lower portion of the body was not moving. I could move only my hands. I was then taken to Dhaka Medical. I spent a night there, and the next day, I was moved here to the CRP.
I also had a chance to speak with Dr. Valerie Taylor, founder of the CRP, about the fallout of a road accident.
The group that CRP particularly cares for are those with spinal injuries, broken necks, broken backs. And this is, I think, something that in general people here and outside the country are really not aware of. What does that mean for the person? Because the accident is over in a split second, but for the injured person, this can be lifelong disability, living in a wheelchair, often in a rural setting, which is not very easily accessible to that wheelchair. Some of these injuries are devastating, particularly if that person was the breadwinner for the family, the person who the whole family depended on.
I then travelled back into Dhaka to visit BRAC. I met with Ahmed Najmul Hussein, director in charge of BRAC's road safety program, to talk about some of the steps that the government is taking with organisations like BRAC towards a better road safety scenario.
Most long-term investment in road safety is investment in education. You know, it is very important to have lessons on road safety starting from formative years of student, that's a playgroup and nursery. It's very good news that this year, new lessons have come on road safety in primary education textbooks. And one major being assessing the highways, and then finding the weaknesses, and then taking countermeasures. Now, highway police capacity and their legislation, their training is being revisited and improved, so that fear of getting caught and fear of getting punished is again back.
In recent years, there have been a number of high-profile, tragic road accidents that have brought greater national attention to the issue of road safety. In September 2009, the country's former finance minister was killed in a road accident on the Dhaka-Sylhet highway, considered among the most dangerous roads in the world. In July 2011, roughly 50 schoolboys were killed when an open truck carrying them along a highway fell into a roadside pond. Then in August 2011, renowned filmmaker Tariq Masood and cinematographer and journalist Mishuk Munir were killed along with three others in a road accident on the also infamous Dhaka-Arisha highway when their minibus was hit by an oncoming passenger bus. I was given an opportunity to speak with Catherine Masood, a filmmaker, wife of the late Tariq Masood, and a survivor of that accident.
Everybody here knows somebody, has a son or a sister, a parent who was killed or severely injured in a road accident. But they're not really accidents in a way. Because accident also, in a way, that term disempowers us. That makes us think that we really had absolutely no control over what happened, that it was just chance. But any particular accident is not really an accident once we dissect the reasons behind it. Either it's a question of poor training of a driver, inadequate licensing, or a vehicle that hasn't been properly maintained or inspected, or a road that hasn't been properly built, or signs haven't been put up to make people aware of any dangerous intersections or points. Our accident occurred on a blind turn, and it was overgrown with vegetation. There was just no way you could see what was coming at you. And the bus that hit us was actually overtaking another bus on that turn. So the bus had swung over into our lane. And there was just no possibility of getting out of the way of that bus before it hit us. Not only was the turn a blind one, the highway itself was narrower by a factor of 8 or 10 meters than it was supposed to be as per the original plan. So there wasn't really a reasonable amount of room even for a two-lane highway to make that turn.
There are some sentiments echoed in the meetings, interviews, and in the research that I conduct about road safety. One is the drastic need for significantly stronger political will that puts immediate, holistic, positive change on the national development agenda. By holistic, I mean a focus on the three E's of road safety engineering, education, and enforcement. Yes, there is a financial cost to safer roads, but surely financial investment would be counterbalanced by a reduction in the 1.5 to 2% of GDP that is currently lost to road accidents every year. Another sentiment is the no less drastic need for individuals, for road users, to adopt safer road practices themselves, to drive within speed limits, and of course to push community leaders to take the message of the need for change right up to government.
That was Sajid Chowdhury reporting from Bangladesh. With me in the studio to discuss road safety is Kevin Watkins, the Executive Director of the Overseas Development Institute, and Kate McMahon, formerly from the UK Department of Transport and now a global road safety consultant. And on the line from Argentina, we have Veronica Raffo, a senior infrastructure specialist for the World Bank in Argentina. So, Kevin, how are we facing a scenario in which the roads are predicted to become one of the leading causes of death in the developing world?
Well, roads are already a leading cause of death in the developing world. In fact, road traffic injury is the major cause of death for people aged between 15 and 29 years old. I was really struck by the scale of the crisis, actually. The Damascus moment for me was standing in a classroom in the slum of Kibera in Kenya. And it was a small school with about 50 children. And I asked one class if they would put their hands up, if they'd either been in or had had a family member in a serious road traffic injury, and well over half of the class put their hands up. You know, this is a crisis which every year it's injuring 50 million people. It's undermining the progress of nations. It's draining health systems. And it really is a development crisis. The paradox of the situation is that it's a silent crisis. It's a crisis that doesn't appear in the media. You never hear finance ministers and prime ministers turning up at summits and talking about it. You never hear the G8 or the G20 talking about it. And I think, you know, our responsibility is to somehow force this issue onto the place that it deserves to be, which is right at the centre of the international development agenda.
Veronica, your experiences in Argentina, could you just add to what Kevin was saying?
Sure. Precisely on making this silent crisis more visible, I think that we have a strong partnership with NGOs and civil society working on this issue that is key precisely to make that happen. We saw a part of that happening at Rio+20, where states recognized this and put it up on the agenda for discussing the post-2015 Sustainable Development Goals. And I think that that's absolutely essential. But indeed, as part of our discussions with government on bilateral lending, on road infrastructure, it's always quite difficult to convince certain sectors of government of the importance of investing more and more on making road infrastructure safer, for example. We have worked in Argentina with a new lead agency that was created back in 2008, precisely as the result of a lot of political pressure by civil society following very terrible statistics on fatalities from road crashes back in 2006 and 2007, which led all the political parties to come together and unanimously approve the creation of this new lead agency. And with them as our counterparts and working very closely also with civil society as part of the project that the World Bank is financing here, we are having impact. I don't want to be overly optimistic, but we are already seeing a reduction of 20% in fatalities, very good intermediate indicators such as the increase on the use of seat belts, use of helmets. And as I said, for me, one of the key aspects in this dialogue is to have a counterpart in government that is your ally, that is a champion, that is an ally with you in making this silent crisis visible and working multi-sectorally with all the stakeholders on bringing solutions.
And Kate, you've obviously spent many years working on road safety here in the UK. What are your reflections on now your work in the developing world?
I think what has really appalled me is the fact that roads are built for speed, with no provision put in at all for vulnerable road users, who are the biggest group of casualties in most developing countries.
Can I just get you to clarify what are vulnerable road users?
People who walk and people who cycle, and to some extent also motorcyclists. Walking is a major form of transport in developing countries, particularly for children getting to school. If you produce a road that is designed to speed the traffic up and you do nothing to put in facilities to make walking safe, no sidewalks, no crossing places. I remember going to a school in India where a major highway had been put through the village. The school was one side, the houses were the other, and they had done nothing to help those children cross the road. And we would never countenance that in Europe, in developed world, but it is accepted as a fact of life, the norm in developing countries.
And why is that? Why is it that these roads are being built as dangerous roads?
I think it's a complete lack of any idea that road safety is important. People so frequently say accidents are the price we have to pay for mobility. Now, that is absolutely wrong. It is morally wrong. It is also factually wrong. We know how to design good, safe roads. And the work that is being done in IRAP, for instance, the International Road Assessment Programme, shows how you can improve roads without killing people.
And just to clarify, IRAP has got a star rating system, hasn't it, which is trying to improve the minimum safety standards of new roads that are being built across the developing world.
Yes, and it does a road inspection, and very importantly, it also produces a menu of low-cost measures that can be put into the road to improve the situation and to get the star rating up.
Kevin, you've obviously travelled extensively looking at this issue. Have you got any reflections on what Kate was saying?
Well, I think Kate hits the nail on the head, because there's an analogy here with how we think about development more broadly. 20 years ago, if you put a bunch of economists in a room and asked them what do they mean by development, they would have spoken almost entirely about the growth of GDP. And then we had people like Amartya Sen, the Indian Nobel Prize winning economist, who came along and made the very simple point that there are lots of countries that are growing very fast in which child mortality rates aren't coming down, in which life expectancy isn't improving. And he made the point that there's more to development than just GDP, and we shouldn't measure it by these very narrow indicators. Now, in road safety, if you talk to any transport minister, pretty much anywhere in the world, and you put them in the chair and you say to them, what's the one thing you really care about? Or actually most World Bank economists for that point, they will tell you it's the speed of transit from point A to point B, because that's something that we can measure. It's something we can punch into a cost-benefit analysis, and it'll tell us what we need to know about economic growth. They're not doing the body count. And, you know, I've stood by the sides of the road, the major trunk roads that link Rajasthan to Delhi in India, and I've watched women carrying firewood and carrying children over a six-lane highway because somebody forgot to put in the overpass. This was a World Bank and Asian Development Bank funded road. So, you know, what we need to see is policymakers, domestic policymakers in developing countries, but also the multilateral development bank stepping up to the plate and taking responsibility, retrofitting, you know, bolting on the safety features after the road is built is not the cost-efficient way to save lives. We need to make this a central part of how we design and think about roads.
And Kevin, you've been very openly critical of the role of the multilateral banks, including the World Bank, in building what you consider to be unsafe roads and not prioritising road safety in their loan packages to governments. I mean, what needs to change?
Well, there's a great deal of good that the World Bank does. The programme in Argentina that Veronica is talking about is a very good example of that. They have another programme in Karnataka, which has dramatically cut deaths on roads. But most projects that the World Bank funds, and bear in mind that the World Bank is one of the biggest external sources of finance for roads, it's about $6 billion annually, and the standards that the World Bank set are a sort of global standard that countries follow. Now, you know, we've looked in detail at around 20 major World Bank projects. Not one of them had a monitorable human life saved outcome built into the project. And I think this speaks volumes about the problem that economists in the bank are not being incentivized to think sufficiently about road safety. And if we don't get this right now, I really believe we're heading for a development disaster. We've got population increasing around the poorest countries. We've got a demographic bulge going on, so the youth population is increasing in particular. We've got an exponential growth in the number of cars. We're going to see the number of cars go from around 1 billion today to 1.5 billion by 2020. Now, you put that together, a lot of young people in countries with already high death rates from road traffic injury, with a lot more cars, and an awful lot of people are going to die and get injured unless we get this right.
And Veronica, do you have anything to add to that, if you've got a response to what Kevin was saying?
I can say that it has been changing recently in terms of how much attention is paid to fatalities or externalities of road infrastructure in the analysis that the bank carries out when these operations are designed. We are working a lot on the data to show the impact on economic growth of a country, the health costs that are associated to fatalities from road crashes, to make the case on the importance of earmarking funds that are allocated to road infrastructure to improve the safety standards of the infrastructure designs. Most of these safety audits, even if they are part of the loans, initial actions need to be sometimes funded with non-reimbursable funds. And for that, we need to increase international commitment to funding road safety actions. One thing that we should highlight is that in the negotiation of lending operations, it's the client, it's the borrower that is sitting at the driver's seat in a way. So for us, it's an awareness raising action as well, like convincing our counterparts, the borrower, of the importance of showing the burden of fatalities on their GDP, on their economic growth, on the social capital that is being lost with these deaths. And for that, I think we need to improve institutions so that you have champions within government that can help you move this agenda forward. And okay, also that those changes will be sustainable in time, because it's not only about road infrastructure. There are lots of things that need to change for road safety to improve. We're talking about countries where driver licenses are bought or where enforcement of legislation on road safety is very, very poor, where there's no awareness at all in society, where kids are taking in motorbikes without any helmets. So there are lots of things that need to be changed, not just safe infrastructure. We are working on all five pillars of the decade of action.
And Kate, Veronica's just touched on some of the key drivers of why there are such a high number of road fatalities. Who needs to be kind of taking the lead on trying to improve the safety of roads?
I mean, I think there has to be shared responsibility between the funders and between the national governments. National governments often are riddled with corruption, though. This is one of the big problems. And that's why the bank's role in auditing is so important, both auditing the plans for building a road, but also auditing if there are road safety features funded, that they actually get there and that they are built properly. So you can't put it all, though, on the national governments. They've got many competing priorities. They've got pressures from other budgets. They need pressure put on them. A grassroots movement in road safety can be very effective. I've seen schemes in Brazil where whole communities have got together, led by the mayor, to say that road safety is absolutely unacceptable in their community. Now, that sort of initiative can spread into the developing world, where you could get the grassroots support, pressure put on governments to call for road safety, to see it as an election issue. That's where pressure can be really put on politicians. If they see that they are going to lose votes in an election, then they start to wake up. But it's a long and difficult process, and the World Banks have to aid that by strict auditing.
Brighter Wire was disabled in a road crash accident and is now a road safety activist in Kenya, a country with the highest rate of accidents in East Africa.
In 1997, I was involved in a road crash. I was a passenger in a private vehicle. A vehicle that was overtaking a truck rammed into our car and another hit us from behind. The shoulders of the road had been washed away and the driver of our vehicle couldn't swerve. I was rescued from the crash by well-wishers and taken to a small hospital which had no facilities. Because of the heavy rains at that time, it took more than 10 hours for me to be taken to another hospital. My spine was injured and my intestines were ruptured. Since then, I have been in a wheelchair. I have been through intense grief and sought therapy to help me process what happened to me. Now, I counsel others who have been through the same trauma. The pain, devastation, and financial psychological impact cannot be ignored. Kenya has the highest rate of road crashes in East Africa. There are over 13,000 crashes a year, and an average of 35 per day. Over 3,000 people are killed a year, on average 7 a day. This is more people than die from malaria. There has been a rapid increase in the number of cars on the roads. While the road network has seen little development, the entire traffic system needs an overhaul, and there are many unlicensed drivers on our roads. The process of obtaining a driver's license has been abused and there is rampant corruption. Enforcement of traffic rules is lax. Road casualties account for nearly 60% of all admissions to surgical wards in Kenya. The financial implication of this is high and hospitals do not have the capacity to deal with increase in road crash survivors. Many survivors need physiotherapy, but the cost of this is too high for most Kenyans. Disabled people in Kenya find it very difficult to be fully integrated into society. Public transport does not cater for people with physical disabilities, and most workplaces are not accessible. Road crashes are also pushing people further into poverty. There are cases where the only breadwinner dies or is severely disabled in a road crash. Basic needs cannot be met, and sometimes children have to drop out of school to allow their family to focus on the treatment of this family member. Wheelchairs and crutches are very expensive, and most disabled people cannot afford them, and the government provides nothing.
That was Bright Oiwaya talking about how road accidents are having a catastrophic effect on lives and putting a huge pressure on healthcare systems in Kenya. Do you think one of the factors is disproportionately the poorest, the most vulnerable, the young who are affected by this?
Yeah. You are seen as a non-person if you are not driving in many countries. Therefore, it doesn't matter. I can remember talking to officials in India, And their attitude was, well, it doesn't really matter that pedestrians are killed on the streets of Delhi. I was told this. When you have that sort of fundamental attitude, it is very difficult to get road safety as a priority.
You know, I think there's a whole bunch of different issues here. One is clearly that most of the victims of road traffic injury in poor countries are far too poor to ever own a vehicle. And by and large, this is a question of the poorest people bearing the brunt of the crisis. And that's probably one of the reasons why policymakers aren't thinking about it. But I think there's a lot of responsibilities up the food chain here as well. You know, it's up to governments in the poorest countries to stop thinking about transport policy as though you can measure progress purely by speed times and the amount of tarmac you've got and the number of six-lane highways you have connecting major centres. It's up to us in development institutes to really capture just how significant this is as a crisis. You know, it's driving people into poverty, it's undermining health systems. You know, we haven't spoken about pollution and climate change. Pollution from vehicles claims just as many lives as road traffic injury. CO2 emissions from cars are one of the fastest growing sources of carbon emissions into the atmosphere, which are driving climate change. But I think at the same time, institutions with power have to exercise power responsibly. If you look at climate change, the World Bank has now said that it won't fund coal-fired power stations in developing countries because of the damage it will inflict on the climate. I think it should be applying exactly the same principle to roads. The bank will not use its resources to fund highways and roads unless basic safety standards are met. Now, 3 years ago, the executives and the presidents of the major multilateral development banks, the Inter-American Development Bank, the World Bank, the Asian Development Bank, and the African Development Bank, all got together and agreed to set standards for road safety that they would all adhere to. They agreed to draw up the standards and to embed them in their project design. That was 4 years ago, almost. They've done nothing. And that is unacceptable. Over that intervening four-year period, almost 5 million people have died on the world's roads. So this is a crisis which demands action now. We've had enough talking. We have the principles there. The Rio Plus 20 summit has again adopted the right principles. We need to start turning principles into action.
Veronica, you touched on this earlier. Do you think one of the problems is that there's not enough of a recognition of how road safety impacts on other development targets? Do you think that there needs to be more kind of cross-working to try and show that this is a development issue that spans a huge variety of different areas of development work?
Absolutely. I think that this is shared responsibility. You know, it has to change at all levels. And to make it change, I think that one of the priorities is to start breaking these silos. Because for us to make a case on the development returns that would come out of small investments that go into roads, to making infrastructure safer and to making institutions that need to work on road safety management stronger and more effective, those are really small amounts that we're talking about. So to make the case stronger, we need to break these silos between the health sector and the transport sector, but also public sector as well, in terms of making public institutions more efficient. And we are doing quite a lot of that in the bank. One of the things that the project in Argentina has shown is that we definitely need to accelerate knowledge transfer between the good performers, the countries that have gotten it right. It took them maybe 30 years to get it right, but now we know exactly what needs to be done.
So can I ask you all, it sounds like from what you're saying, Veronica, progress is being made. There is greater sense of collaboration, certainly within some sectors of the development community. But why is it not higher up the development agenda? Okay.
Big, sexy road schemes are the things that politicians want. They want to be cutting the ribbon on the next major highway. They don't care whether there are ditches at the side of the road that the lorries will fall into, that the buses will fall into. Those are ignored. And so you've got to really get that profile much, much higher across the people who have influence in a country. NGOs can do some of this, but they can't do it alone. And it isn't easy. Although we know what to do, it's getting the will there. It's getting strong lead agencies in every country who are funded and are equipped and have the will. It's political will is really what is lacking in road safety. Things are improving, but they're improving too slowly. Getting it onto the new sustainable development goals will help. it will raise the profile. And I'm optimistic that if that happens and the development banks and governments can work together and really recognise that it is an absolute moral detriment that we are killing people by building roads and by building substandard vehicles. I think that's the other question we haven't touched on. The developing world's vehicles do not meet European standards. Therefore, they are killing their occupants with poor braking systems, poor lighting systems, killing the people outside the cars as well.
There are an awful lot of double standards knocking around in this area. The fact that we have the world's major car companies, General Motors, Volkswagen, and others, who are adopting lower safety standards for Latin America and Asia than they are in Europe and North America, that's not acceptable. One of the major roads that has attracted a huge amount of investment from multilateral development banks in Africa is the Mombasa to Nairobi highway. It's a six-lane highway which links up countries across the region to the port of Mombasa. Now, the point at which that road comes into Nairobi, it's right behind the slum of Kibera, which I mentioned earlier. We were doing some filming for the Make Road Safe campaign where we walked with a group of kids across that highway to go to their school. And one of the most terrifying things I've seen in my life is walking with a 12-year-old girl carrying her brother, who was 5 or 6 years old, across that six-lane highway, you know, with major lorries, motorbikes. And the analogy that I would draw with this, if somebody in the United Kingdom were to envisage sending their kids off to school, their 12-year-olds off to school, to cross the M1 every day, they would think about road safety in a very different way. And that's the reality facing parents in Africa. And I think, you know, all of us as parents around the world understand that there's nothing more important than your kid having a safe journey to school, adults having an opportunity to go safely to their place of employment. And really, ultimately, that's what we have to work towards.
My thanks to Kevin Watkins and Kate McMahon and Veronica Raffo from Argentina. For more on this, visit theguardian.com/global-development.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.